Well, it wasn't a pretty game, a very odd one, in fact. But the Golden State Warriors, again, outplayed the Celtics. They do it on the back of their defense. That, as much as the brilliance of Steph Curry has been the key ingredient in their three victories in this series, despite 23% from three, Steph's 233 game streak in the playoffs and postseason of making a three-pointer. First playoff game, he didn't make a three-pointer in his career. Golden State largely controlled this one outside of the third quarter and wins by double digits.
I'm happy you brought up the Warriors defense because I think that both the combination of their defense and some mistakes that Boston made, and don't worry, we will talk about those as well, that gave the Warriors a little bit more of a margin for error than I necessarily thought they did. We lavished justified praise upon Stephen Curry after his game four, and he'd done huge things in the series overall. And we wondered what would happen if he had an off night. And Curry contributes to the team's offensive success even when he's not hitting three-pointers by the attention he draws, and he had eight assists and only one turnover in this game, but defending really well. And I think the place I want to start with that, I mean, there are two different kind of bigger threads there that for the Warriors defense I think are important. One of them is forcing turnovers, and not necessarily in this one the turnover margin, though that was important and we will get there. Instead, it was forcing 18 turnovers, nine of which were live ball, and the Warriors scored 22 points. They had a 22-9 advantage on points off turnovers.
Yeah, that was huge, even though the Warriors didn't have their best transition scoring game in this one. And a fair number of the turnovers that even were dead ball were forced, like a Tatum travel, Smart's offensive foul by Poole being an irritant against him.
A sell job as well.
Of course. But he did make contact with his face
Yes,
after kind of
it
the
was.
hand fighting began.
I like to distinguish between embellishment and a flop. That was embellishment. There was actual contact. It was just oversold.
Yeah, and
Yeah,
I
and
think the biggest thing that I took away, the Celtics did not get up as many three-pointers as they have been throughout these playoffs, only 32. They had a very weird three-point shooting game in which they missed their first 12, then made their next eight, and then finished up 3 for 12 the rest of the way. So that was pretty odd. And of course, the end of the second and then beginning of the third, as they stormed back from a 12-point halftime deficit to take the lead and put up 35 points in the third quarter and no more than 23 in any other quarter. But I thought that whether it was Boston's passing not being that great or the Warriors just being able to rotate out to guys, which certainly they had probably, I think, their best game rotating out to the perimeter, running guys off the line. And then also just their overall forcing Boston to play in a crowd. And it's a little different of an approach for the Warriors than the way Miami does it, right? Where Miami, they're very aggressive, helping off the first pass a lot of the time, gapping off of their man on the axis between ball and man. Whereas Golden State, if there is, I mean, they'll definitely press up on you and not let you take a three off the dribble. They only have a couple of guys who are going to do that anyway. And then once the drive has begun, that's when the help gets there and they really start to overload. And I think Tatum and Brown, these guys are pretty big guys, athletic finishers. The Warriors don't have a Rob Williams type of guy on the floor. They think that there's an opening to get to the basket, and whether it's someone sneaking in from the corner or Kevon Looney or Draymond Green coming over, you just don't see those guys in your vision as you drive to the basket the way you would just a massive rim protecting presence, and you go up for the shot and it's not even necessarily that they're getting it blocked a lot of these times, it's just they're missing. Like the Warriors, and this has been the case for them for a long time, and some of the players have been similar throughout a lot of that period, but they get other guys in too. They just make it difficult to finish in the paint in a way that you don't necessarily anticipated. I thought Tatum did not have a great passing game. In fact, no Celtic had more than four assists in this game. They had 18 assists on 31 field goals. They got to the foul line a lot too. That'll depress your assist numbers some. And they had the 18 turnovers. And just the Celtics, they're not out yet. I would guess that the numbers on the Celtics drives, they probably had a ton of drives and just weren't able to be efficient on those plays because of the good Warriors defense.
Right. And overall, Boston, 18 of 36 in the paint, and you want to do better than 50% on shots in the paint. They did get to the line 31 times, and importantly, Boston missed 10 free throws in this game. That is another missed opportunity, yeah. One of many for them in this contest. And
Tatum was 2 out of 6. He had two trips to the line where he missed them both.
Brown and Tatum, appropriately considering the team shot 50% in the paint, they were 8 of 18, so slightly below 50%. And that also meant that Robert Williams, you know, he was 4 of 5, but 5 shots, you know, and Horford only took 2 shots in the paint, so they're not getting, like, though they're not transferring those to, like, clean looks as much for bigs. And you brought up how the contesting shots around the basket, but another thing that the kind of the late digs and the help reacting to drives that happens for the Warriors, and some of that's in the steal numbers, and like included Gary Payton had the second had 3 steals in this game. The Warriors in general had 9, overall had 9, but also in the hustle stats, the Warriors credited with 17 deflections compared to Boston's 7.
That's a 17 deflections is a big number.
Big number. 5 of those GP2, Clay had 4, Draymond had 3, and then a bunch of other guys had 2 or 1.
Clay really continues to have kind of reinvented himself as a pretty solid help defender. He had a big play in the fourth where he came over and forced a miss on Tatum, and he's getting more strips than he ever has as well. I think maybe just because he's diminished a little bit in terms of his lateral movement, and he's playing off the ball a little bit more. He's focused more on that, whereas his previous role used to be like the glued to you guy, primary assignment defender. So he's another one of these guys who actually has started to make a few more plays for this Warriors defense. And even with Draymond Green spending a fair amount of the night in foul trouble, even with Kevon Looney barely playing in the first after getting 3 fouls in the first quarter, barely playing in the first half, I should say, they're able to come off the bench with Gary Payton, the second game this series where he's played 25 or more minutes. He was plus 16. And also, like, I think he really helps them again offensively with his pace and finishing around the rim, getting some timely offensive rebounds. He was 1 of 3 on threes. You know, it's still not a huge threat for him other than when he's standing in the corner. He hit a floater over Horford as well. And then contrast that with Poole coming off the bench with 14. I thought he actually had his best defensive game in the series. Like, they're really, dang, I don't recall any plays where he just got, like, overwhelmed in the way that he has at times earlier in the series. And I think part of that was just that they did a better job of keeping him out of bad matchups. And the Celtics got a couple of things there where Tatum's man had to go under the screen and Tatum got a shot, but largely they kept Poole out of the matchup, and he had a few plays boxing out and with good help rotation, so it actually made a positive difference, played with like a little bit more force than he normally does. We probably should talk next about the night of one Andrew Wiggins, who was probably at least, I mean, would you say he was the best player on the floor? I mean, I'm always loath to say that, particularly about the Warriors, because everything revolves around Steph. And a lot of times when Andrew Wiggins, or let's say Andre Iguodala in the 2015 finals, does well, it's based off of what Steph is doing. But certainly Wiggins was outstanding tonight.
His defensive effort and intensity made a huge difference, often taking on the tough defensive assignments for the Celtics, whether that's Tatum or Brown in that given moment. He also had some very nice help defensive plays. There was one where he got a kind of a help block from behind, which was really impressive. And Wiggins got more aggressive offensively. Didn't make a 3, 0 for 6 in this one, but 12 for 17 on twos. And Robert Williams has vexed, stymied Andrew Wiggins basically the entire time they've shared the floor. And Andrew Wiggins had some real baskets on Robert Williams in the fourth quarter that helped seal the game.
Yeah, he got one going to the rim. Now, when Wiggins can really load up, you know, I think he's going to try to just score on anybody. And he got one of those off the pet play that the Warriors got a ton of mileage out of in this game. They get the ball into the post and then have a big screen away for Curry on this play. 2 jumped out on Curry. They finally switched up what they were doing because they were giving up wide open threes on that every time. And then Steph hit Wiggins on the roll. He had an acrobatic finisher on Williams. And then he took him one-on-one as well, and it got to his spot. I think the Warriors are starting to understand, Poole had one on him in game 5, that if you can kind of attack Williams, get him moving backwards, that's where he can't really explode up and you can actually get your shot off against him in an isolation. And again, his individual defense on Tatum was awesome. I mean, Tatum really, I don't like to look at the matchup data because it can get a little bit wonky as far as like who in theory is guarding who when you're just trying to do it with an algorithm. Seth actually had a good tweet thread about that this weekend that I retweeted. But on plays where Wiggins has just guarded Tatum and Tatum has tried to attack him without a screen or anything like that, I mean, maybe he scored like once or twice in the whole series, I would say, with just a lot of really bad misses. Like Tatum really just can't get going against Wiggins at all, I would say. So he was a nice game on the glass again as well. So yeah, I mean, he's just been an absolutely invaluable player for the Warriors in these last two series in particular.
Speaking of invaluable, the Celtics outscored the Golden State Warriors by 11 points in Robert Williams' 30 minutes of action.
Yeah.
They lost this game by 10. It was the on-offs were Embiid-esque, and when you consider who Robert Williams' backup was in this game,
Yeah, Al Horford, he starts the game, but when Rob comes off the floor, Horford is on it. And Horford overall in this one was negative 19 in 33 minutes, hit a couple of threes during their big run, but that was about it. And were you able to get the numbers on just the Horford only minutes? Not sure if there's a great way to do that at this point before things have
there
updated.
isn't a great way to do it, but so if we
Oh, I
want to
might be able
use
to get it actually. Hold on. Oh, never mind. You can't do this by date on cleaning the
yeah it
glass.
yeah it but basically, so the Robert Williams plus 11 and the Warriors were ahead by
Well, here,
16.
yeah, I guess so. If he's no, never mind. We can't
Well, no, so anyway, okay, here. So the Warriors
I'm
were
too
the
tired.
Warriors were ahead by 16 when everyone got pulled, and Robert Williams, they were plus 11 in his minutes. So that means they were negative 27 in the minutes where Robert Williams was not on the floor. And until there was a very minuscule part of Grant Williams at the five. So I guess maybe we could say the Warriors were up 13. So then I would probably say it that they were negative 24 during the minutes where Horford played center. That's as a
Yeah.
very rough
Yeah,
calculation.
no, that's probably fair. And that was 16 minutes. So minus 24 in about 16 minutes. Or 15 minutes, actually, yeah, because they
15,
went
yeah.
out just under 3 minutes left. Woof. I mean, that's really like the Warriors. Overall, they were really able to score well in the paint. Again, I mean, to go 9 of 40 from three and still end up winning this game in the end comfortably.
Well, and not only 9 of 40 from three, they still had a 93 first shot half court offense. Like, that's about league average overall
Yeah.
this year. And again, that doesn't include putbacks. That doesn't include anything else. And the Warriors didn't grab a ton of offensive rebounds in this game. They had four individually credited, or if you want to think of it this way, 11% of their possessions were offensive rebounds. So they were just getting things around the basket. And it's not only it's not only the contested shots around the basket that Robert Williams makes hard, it's the shots that players, especially Draymond Green, don't take because they think he's in the area, and the drives that the Warriors don't take because they don't think they're going to get anything from it. And so Golden State's offense, I've long thought of games involving the Golden State Warriors as the Curry minutes and the non-Curry minutes. This series, honestly, I think a more fair lens is the Robert Williams and the non-Robert Williams minutes.
Yeah, and 30 minutes was absolutely as much as they could play him. He only played 12 in the first half. They're down by 12. They change up the substitution pattern in the third when things are going well. Ended up playing Rob 18 of the first 21 minutes in the second half when they took him out to start I think he played the entire third, and they took him out to start the fourth. They're down one and immediate run by the Warriors to basically put the game out of reach. Not out of reach, but they would never get close again after that. You know, just that 3 minute run with Steph off the floor, as you mentioned, wasn't as big of a deal. So they pushed Rob, I think, as hard as they could. I mean, for him to play 30 minutes, and I think they made the right call getting him out with 3 minutes left in the game. There's no reason to potentially have him out there any longer. Talk about some of the strategic changes that were made. The Celtics generally tried to have the bigs up even higher. I think that worked pretty well overall.
They
Steph,
also did a much better job limiting Steph Curry's potential damage going left.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think they really, in isolation, they forced him right. Smart was pretty good getting into the ball, forcing him right. You know, and they gave up a layup to Draymond in pick and roll when they basically are just, you don't want to say weak because a sensible weak hand is his left hand, but, you know, just forcing him right from basically mid-court and not letting him get to the left side of the floor. And so he just drove downhill and hit Draymond on the roll, and that was one of their few finishes around Rob that they got. And so that was pretty good. I thought Curry, particularly in the second half, just did not have his legs. Like, shots were short. He just looked kind of rickety, just didn't look like he had a good base on those didn't appear to be moving well. I think maybe he tweaked it. Maybe it was just because it seemed like everyone who mattered in this game was limping or exhausted at one point or another. So maybe that's just what it was. It could have just been that foot is starting to swell up on him a little bit, or he did something else. Who knows? But he definitely looked, his drive game was still pretty effective. You know, he still had 16 points despite not hitting a three. But the Celtics just did a much better job of limiting his three pointers. Then I thought they really let him get loose in the second half, and he just didn't make them. I thought he actually got some of the cleanest looks that he's gotten in the series in the second half, and just was a little off balance and just wasn't comfortable.
Well, and on that kind of note, going to the other team, you and I both rewatched the fourth quarter, and I noticed a more stark difference than I had remembered in terms of the, it's not the good and bad Jason Tatum shots, but the shots that you would expect him to make and the shots that are a little bit but like harder than that standard. And Tatum's a good shot. He's a good hard shot maker, generally speaking. But like when he kind of went up and you could see if his feet were under him, like those kind of like off balance or fading or anything else, like those are much harder shots. But then when he had his feet set and things were going, they went in a whole hell of a lot other than the free throws.
No, I think that's a great point, that he has not made that many difficult shots in this series. And also, I mean, I think he's probably still shooting better from three than from two in the series, and maybe even significantly so. I think he was at 34%
Yeah,
overall for the
he's
series.
at 45% from three and 37% from the field, which includes the three. So yeah, significantly better.
Yeah, so he's probably like 32. And yeah, I mean, I think just because again, the long arms of the Warriors, just their surprise ability, surprisingly contest, whether it's at the rim or on jump shots, other than the likes of Curry and Poole, it caused a lot of problems for him. So getting back to the Celtics bigs and the strategy, they also seemed more attuned to getting the bigs up on Klay when he came off a screen. Draymond got a fake DHO dunk on Rob there. It seemed like they played around with that a little bit, but then the most effective thing they did that they just weren't able to sustain, I think just due to the energy required, was they came out with a plan at the start of the third quarter to switch and then deny basically any Warriors action out on the floor, which is what caused the Warriors so much problem in that 2018 series against Houston. Was they just not only were they switching and not giving up an advantage off the ball, but they also just made it difficult to run their offense. The Warriors had three turnovers on the first four possessions of the second half after only having three. And I remarked at halftime on Twitter that one of the biggest things that surprised me about the series is that the Celtics hadn't been able to turn the Warriors over more than they did. And so, but the Warriors had taken one shot, they'd gotten four possessions, Boston had gotten four possessions, and they scored 10 points on them, and they were basically right back in the game at that point. And then I think Boston went up by as much as four, and then the Warriors, they got a couple of Klay threes that were probably the biggest shots of the game from their perspective. And it seemed like, though, that Boston just ran out of energy to really execute defensively with that level of intensity and pressure. And just given the injury situations with some of their guys like Smart, and the fact that White was largely ineffective in this game, couldn't play that many more minutes, I think they just couldn't maintain it. Like, I think they kind of just called it off once they got back into the game, just realizing that that level of pressure just wouldn't be sustainable. But it worked for a period of time. And I mean, that was my thought. Like, I didn't see them doing that once you got into the second half of the third, and then really at all in the fourth. Although the Warriors also, I think, by the end of the third, had really simplified the offense more. They did actually more of like the beautiful game, fake DHO, coming off screens type of stuff in the first half, and then at the start of the third quarter, and then they finally ditched it.
To me, the definitive stretch of this game came. So Jordan Poole hits a buzzer beater, second time in the series to end a quarter. And at different points, you and I are in the arena watching live. You thought it was late live. I thought it was late on the replay, and it did. It was off of his fingers in time. That gave the Warriors a 1-point lead going into the fourth.
No,
And
I think when I said live, I think I was saying it was late
it
as he was
couldn't.
passing it to
Yeah,
him, because
because
I'm
there
like,
was
there's
no
no way he
time.
can get it off this fast. And
Yeah,
he did
he
somehow.
did.
Like, I couldn't believe he got off a half
That
court shot that fast.
that's totally fair. Yeah, in my mind, it was almost simultaneous, just like the shot.
Well, it
And
probably was simultaneous. It's just my brain works a lot slower than my mouth does, or a lot faster than my mouth
yeah,
does.
and but so Warriors up one, start of the fourth quarter. Wondered how long, even though Curry wasn't having the most prolific game as a scorer, wondered how long he was going to be out, how that was going to go. It was a 10-3 start to the fourth quarter for the Warriors. Klay Thompson hit a three. Jordan Poole had some really nice offense. And I thought it was, though, the Warriors' defense that really set that tone there. I thought the 3 points, being all that Boston got, that was pretty well earned by Golden State's defense. And then from that point, they never really looked back. And so to get those minutes, you know, the non-Curry minutes are always so important for the Golden State.
Yeah, I mean, and it was just drives and a couple of missed Derek White threes when they tried to have him, one play they tried to have him run pick and roll, and they just went under on him after the Celtics did a lot of the same thing they did in game five, which was screening for either Tatum or Brown with whoever Poole or Curry was guarding, and the Warriors just did a much better job of dealing with that. Like on this play, Draymond actually just got through that screen, and then White tried to run a pick and roll, they just went under on him, he missed the shot. Poole had actually a nice recovery against Tatum after Draymond flopped for a foul, then they kicked it to White and he kind of hesitated on a three because someone flashed at him out of the corner and missed it, went in and out. And Brown had some drives in the fourth that were just like really ugly turnovers. Like he had a terrible game overall. They did a very nice job of not letting him get right on his downhill drives, just not letting him get downhill as much at all. And I thought Draymond largely had a bounce back game in part with his defense on Brown, although he did foul out of his third game, which is the most anyone has in the finals since 2000, which, you know, it's not like Draymond's going against Shaq here like those Pacers were.
And there was also a stretch during that fourth that was just brutal for Marcus Smart. So started out with him, it was about the 10-minute mark. He gets some contact from Klay Thompson, but he flops really hard. And my criticism there, and you get people going like, oh, it was a push-off. And yeah, there was a push-off there, is that when you flop as aggressively as Marcus Smart did, you are making a very specific bet that the officials are going to call it and they're going to call it in your favor. Because if anything other than that happens when you're on Klay Thompson, it's a bad outcome for the Boston Celtics because you're giving one of the best shooters alive all the time in the world to take a wide open three. And so I can understand the criticism that it should have been an offensive foul, but there's also process here from a player perspective, which is that you're making a gamble that they're going to have seen it exactly the way that you did instead of just playing good defense.
And you also just have to know who the refereeing crew is too. Like Mark Davis is probably the most flop averse referee in the league, and then Smart comes down the other end, tries to flop on Wiggins getting through a screen where we named him during the pandemic quarantine period. We did a podcast in which we ranked the league's flopper, and he was number one to me because he just has such flopping versatility, and he'll just like launch himself, and he did that. It was just a ridiculous flop. And then the Celtics actually get a foul call later in the possession, and he still gets teed up arguing about, no, I should have gotten my foul call earlier in the possession, which was just a bad way to give away a point. Udoka got a technical earlier as well, and I thought that was rather ironic considering that the Celtics shot 31 free throws in this game and the Warriors shot 15, and I thought really through most of the game the Warriors had the rougher whistle. You know, Looney got three fouls early and Klay got a couple of, I thought actually the first four Warriors fouls of the third as the Celtics were making their run were all pretty borderline calls. And, you know, I do think more contact at the rim does help the Warriors because that's just kind of the way that they defend.
But yeah, like that one where Draymond, was that on Derek? I can't remember who that was on. Like he drilled the guy they didn't call foul.
Oh, yeah. I think it was Derek White where he didn't go A to B. He went about A to Q on that jump and just, I mean, we could see it where we were sitting. He just jumped completely across the lane and just slammed into him with the body. And Draymond falling out, you know, I think he has not been quite the same to me in these playoffs in terms of his athleticism. I think that's where the biggest decline has been. And like, I think his rebounding, getting off the floor quickly for rebounds hasn't been quite the same, or even just getting like those little tips to somebody else. And he also hasn't been quite the same as a rim protector. Like his shot blocks are down, I think, even compared to where he was early in the season. But remember, he came back from that back injury. And, you know, I think he's been like a little heavy after that too. You know, he's not in peak shape. And he's still been a very effective player. And the fact that he can play center and still switch on it. I mean, the fact that he can guard someone with the quickness of Jaylen Brown at his size and also still be a guy who can battle in the post and protect the rim and all that is still exceedingly valuable. But he still is not, he's not at the same peak level. And I think he's actually, his lateral quickness is just as good. He's just not at the same level getting off the ground as he was, even I would say at the beginning of this year.
Couple other kind of tactical notes. Because of the foul trouble for Looney and Draymond Green at the same time, we actually saw not only some Andre Iguodala, but Andre Iguodala at center at the end of the first quarter. Iguodala doesn't look too much better to me physically than he did in game one, and he did play briefly in game three. So the good news for Steve Kerr is that they haven't had to rely on Iguodala. And then that was an interesting decision that came in the fourth. You know, the Warriors were, they had built this lead and Poole was a very important part of that. But then they end up going, I think it was this stretch, you can correct me if I'm wrong, where they ended up going to Gary Payton the second. And his defense, he had a couple of steals, he had at least one steal and maybe a deflection during that period of time. It worked out really well.
Yeah, and I thought that the way that they used Poole in this game was pretty good. I mean, to have 14 points, but only play 14 minutes. He basically just played one stint, 7 minute stint, essentially in each half, and came out, had pretty good energy, 3 of 6 from three. He also had a nice pull up as well, rejecting the screen and pick and roll at the fourth. I think that's, that shot is that quick release pull up two is going to be a big shot for his career going forward as well. When he can't get all the way to the rim necessarily against teams like the Celtics, but as soon as Steph came back in, and you thought, oh, maybe Poole's got it going, they'll keep him in. Nope, they just took him out and put Gary Payton the second back in instead. And I really think that Kerr leaning into the defense and then just trusting Steph and Klay and also Andrew Wiggins, who's just been more empowered to attack. And yeah, you know what? Andrew Wiggins over the course of a full season with a high 20s usage rate is probably going to be, you know, low 50% true shooting. But hey, in this series, just to not turn it over and get like a decent shot that has a, you know, 42% chance of going in the half court when things have kind of broken down, or someone who could just attack a closeout and get into the lane. Like, that's worth something if you're defending as well as they have in their three wins in this series.
Another quirk of this game, only three members of the Golden State Warriors made a three-pointer in this game. Klay had
Yeah.
five. He was 5 of 11. Poole was 3 of 6, and GP2 was 1 out of 3. Curry, Wiggins, Porter Jr., and Draymond Green all 0 for, and that's 4 of their 5 starters. And you brought up the stat, which is, of course, was big, that this was Curry's first playoff game without a three. It's also the first game he's had, regular season or playoffs, since November 8th, 2018, where Stephen Curry did not make a three-pointer.
Yeah, and I think Klay started off pretty rough in this series. Like game one, he was had the primary assignment on Jaylen Brown, and he got torched pretty badly, particularly at the start of the fourth quarter when the Celtics made their big run and really struggled to shoot the ball. But I mean, he hit some of the biggest shots of the game. As I said, he was 5 of 11 from three. Also, like, his two pointers weren't too terrible. He was 2 out of 3 on twos. You know, only 14 shots, like, didn't take bad shots, but he was very efficient. 21
He
points.
also had one of the best passes I've seen from him in a while to Looney, and then Looney missed the layup.
Yeah, and so the last three games, Klay has made 14 threes on 34 attempts. Pretty good. And I think his defense has been much improved. He's averaging over 20 points. Like, that's basically exactly what they need from him as a second scorer. And he's been relatively efficient. And he's also right back to just playing a ton of minutes again. I mean, it really seems, Danny, though, like, I would question a little bit Udoka playing Brown and Tatum the entire second half. And now, maybe, I don't know that if you were going to take one of those guys off the floor, you probably would have done it late third or early fourth. Well, if they'd done it early fourth, I guess it couldn't have been any worse for them. Yeah, I mean, that was again what was so crazy about that run was Steph is out of the game. They've got Draymond and Looney in. They have Horford at center. Like, that should be a good offensive group, a five out group. And they couldn't score. Still thought maybe they could have made some more kickout passes during that period. And they also got lit up. And it's just like, that's the personnel that you should be winning with. And I think Al Horford he was better on the perimeter defensively in this game, but he's had no effect as a rim protector whatsoever. He just, like, when Jordan Poole had a blow by on Derek White early in the fourth, he just, like, never came over. He was just, like, wasn't even looking. He was, like, getting ready to go out of the lane in 2.9 after the drive. it already started. He's still moving away, like not even looking. There's a lot of plays like he's had like a couple. I think he had like blocked Draymond one time, but overall he just has not been like in position stepping up, largely in part probably because he's so worried about all the off-ball stuff that's going on. Any other kind of small notes in this one?
There was a play where Steph Curry drove and Robert Williams was there. I still don't know exactly why it happened. Maybe he thought Robert Williams was going to come to the near side of the rim. Curry goes far side and Robert Williams blocks the layup with the side of his right hand. It was just incredible.
Yeah, that was right at the end of the first half. And then they gave up an inbound. Or no, sorry, that was the end of the first quarter. Then they gave up an inbound to Andrew Wiggins and then got teed up also right after that gave up one out of three free throws.
Right, yeah, Curry missed the tech and then Wiggins split his two. And Curry only ended up taking three free throws in the entire contest.
The pool banked three at the end of the third. Second time at the end of the third, he's hit like a 40-footer. But Grant Williams just stopped playing in the last 5 seconds after the Celtics missed. And it's just amazing to me how often guys just like, all right, there's not enough time for them to do anything, whatever. It's just like, just play for five more seconds, then you get to rest for 4 minutes. That's how long these fucking timeouts are between quarters. And Grant Williams, you're playing like 15 minutes a game. Gary Payton II, he's got his second foul on just, like, he's very active on the boards overall. Like, I commend him for that. He plays much bigger than his size. But he does do this face-guarding box-out thing, the Jaren Jackson Jr. box-out, where that just doesn't work. Like, you need to just, you're always, if the ball goes anywhere in your direction and you're just face-guarding the guy, you're always going to get called for holding him. Just turn around, get your butt into him. Even if you can't move him back, just prevent him from going forward and at least don't get called for a foul. And, hey, we only have, at most, 6 more days until we get to say goodbye to the Eurofile forever, we hope.
I'll believe it when I see it.
All right, what's next here? Are there many adjustments left?
We could see Boston go back to more of the kind of a little bit more of the defensive approach that they had in games 3 and 4. I don't know if it'll work, but we could see
more of the drop coverage. I mean, yeah. I think there's maybe, you know, Steph looked pretty rickety in this game, as I said, and so maybe they'll say, hey, the reason that he looked rickety was because we were more aggressive on him and changed our approach. And but, you know, if he just hits 3 of his 9 threes or 4 of his 9 threes, he still has a pretty efficient game. So I think where they were was a pretty good place. You know, it's just tough with Rob getting out on the floor because he's very vulnerable to like fake DHOs and just making a mistake. It's just much better to keep him back in the paint or just guarding the guy coming off the screen. Like if he's going to get a little bit further up, but he doesn't have to get that far up because he can still bother you. You know, I did think that Rob still didn't look like quite as explosive and quick off his feet as he did in game 4 before he kind of hurt himself.
Another potential adjustment, even though Derek White didn't hit shots in this game, I would be more comfortable playing when Steph Curry's on the floor, playing Derek White than having Al Horford at the four. So like if Robert Williams is out there, I don't think you need that secondary help. And Horford hasn't been as much.
They did go with Horford and Williams together, taking out White. White is who Williams replaced when he came back in after that 3 minute rest in the fourth. And so you're saying you would have just taken out Horford instead there?
Yes, that's what I would have done.
Yeah. I mean, I guess Horford was hitting his shot, so they wanted some secondary rim protection. But
and yeah, Derek White, like you brought this up as we were watching the game, like he's had a few, you know, it's this idea of just like on offense, like good players on one end of the floor can have flaws. He got blown by a couple times by quick players.
Yeah, it's really interesting how that's happened. I mean, it happened in just guys getting downhill at him. He has kind of struggled to deal with it a little bit in these playoffs. Like Butler, Wiggins has gotten him a couple times. Poole blew by him in the fourth, and he wasn't able to have the same kind of effect as a help defense guard as we've seen at times in this series, like on Poole when he just bedeviled him in game 2. But yeah, White not hitting any shots, so it was difficult. He was -13. I mean, they really, you know, Peyton Pritchard had 3 pretty open looks, but that was just during that period where they couldn't hit anything, and he didn't play in the second half. I might have considered playing him more. Like I think he would, like, he hasn't gotten lit up on defense or anything. I think, you know, Udoka maybe is guilty of, oh, you missed your 3 3-pointers, I'm gonna take you out now. Like that seems, you know, you just have to get something from some of these bench guys. And Grant Williams has been a non-factor in this series except in game 3. He actually had a couple of nice blocks. He blocked a Steph 3 from behind.
Yeah, that was actually one of the Celtics' best plays of the game. He blocked that 3 from behind, then Robert Williams threw a gorgeous hit ahead pass to Williams for what became an and one.
Yeah, his only bucket of the game. But Grant was negative negative 18 in 16 minutes. So yeah, I mean, it feels like, you could very easily, particularly given Golden State's record on road closeout games in these playoffs, in which they are 0-3, that they'll go back there and the crowd will be massive and the athleticism of the Celtics will be flying around. Steph will have a rough shooting game and they'll just get totally blown out of the building and come back for game 7. Now, this is already game 6, which is a little bit different. They're not in a situation like where it's early in the series and they're up 3-1 or 3-0. So I think they do recognize where this is at. But also, I mean, Boston just looked so worn down by the end of this game. And yeah, you do have a cross-country flight. There is a 2-day break, but that cross-country flight probably, we've heard some players talk about how long the flight is. So, you could see Boston just not being able to score against this Warriors defense again, and Golden State kind of winning the way that they won game 2 and game 6. I could see that too. I thought that the swing factor in this series was going to be Warriors offense against Celtics defense, and that really has kind of been the case. I think largely Boston, other than game 3, has not scored well against Golden State defense. So yeah, really still kind of comes down to like the whole Rob thing and the athleticism. I've also just been disappointed in, Jason Tatum just, and I think he's playing so many minutes and he has such a massive offensive load that he just can't, but like Jason Tatum, like how many steals and blocks does he have in this series? He had 0 combined tonight.
He has a total of 3 blocks, all of which came in the same game, game 4, and he has 4 steals, 1 each in the first 4 games.
Yeah, so that's just, he's not had the level of activity as a secondary rim protector. I mean, I just don't remember him making any plays, really, like help plays at the rim hardly. And again, that's partially just because of this off-ball movement of the Warriors and the shooting that they have. Like, you're just more focused on that. You don't get as much at the rim. You can't be just like helping off of guys at the nail as easily either. So like just the shooting and movement of the Warriors like does mess with some of these guys' brains who are usually pretty good help defenders, where your number one thing that you're worried about is getting out to the three-point line. And for Golden State, the Bielitsa experiment didn't go very well. He was -9. I still think they'll want to try to get some minutes out of him. I think if you are Golden State, you don't go too aggressively, particularly not in the first half with guys' minutes.
I mean, to me, the guy that you lean on more is Looney, except in this game, he was dealing with foul trouble the first half.
Right. Yeah. GP2, I think he's pretty fresh. He had a bunch of time off. I think he's not playing that many minutes. I might actually try to get more minutes for Poole, particularly in the first half, and particularly because Steph just really struggled in this game. So, and he was 7 of 13 from 2, which is totally fine, and had 8 assists. Like, he still was plus 15 in the game. He just didn't hit any of his three-pointers, but I was just a little worried about it, how he was moving in that fourth quarter. But, Tatum, couldn't even get back on defense. Rob is always, kind of limping around. Smart had another one of those weird periods where he was just, got tangled up and couldn't run back, and then suddenly he's fine 2 possessions later. Maybe he just has some kind of a brace or insert in his shoe that gets messed up or something. I didn't see anything acute that happened to him really, but he's dealing with this foot and ankle issue, and so it just looks like everyone is about ready to drop it in this series. Clay got a Charlie horse, Poole got a Charlie horse, he wasn't moving well for a while, so it is kind of becoming a war of attrition. But I think that plays into Golden State advantage a little bit more. Even if they're older, they've got more playable depth in this series, particularly on offense, and they're willing to use it as well. And Tatum and Brown just have to work so incredibly hard to get their points. And they also just have to be the ones creating every single thing against this Warriors defense. So what do you think happens in game 6? Do you think Celtics will win it?
I'd have the Celtics as slight favorites, but I think it's close to 50-50. I've had trouble with that in this series.
Yeah, I agree. And well, for the Celtics to win, as I predicted before the series, it would have to be in 7 games now. So they are massive underdogs, but still capable. I would say it's just their offense has been, it really feels like their offense is getting the life choked out of it these last 2 games by really, really good Warriors defense. And I'm not sure, other than just getting a bunch of turnovers and energy and offensive rebounds, just kind of more athletic plays, I don't know how they are, and actually forcing some Warriors turnovers. Warriors only had 6 turnovers in this game again, which is just incredible. It's so hard to beat Golden State State when they don't turn it over like that.
Six turnovers and only two of them were live ball steals.
Yeah. But again, I think like this boss with other than Rob and Smart, you know, Jaylen Brown is like the guy who's kind of glued to Clay off the ball. And I think he's done an okay job there, but they just aren't, they don't have the energy, it seems like, to make the kind of plays that they made in earlier series defensively. All right, we are done here. We don't, there's that Denver OKC trade we got to talk about. We don't have the protections on that pick yet that's out, so we'll get to that a little bit later. A few other small news things. Also, of course, a reminder that we'll be on playback for game 6 on Thursday. Link to that is in the show notes, and lots of great content out as well. We did the Jabari Smith scouting report today. I think we had some interesting thoughts and even some disagreements on him. And then Paolo Banchero is going to be tomorrow, podcast gods willing. We'll talk to you all then.